This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin on AM 740, aided and abetted by
Absent Without Is Dean that Holland. Dean Holland?
How are you?
Oh, my goodness.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. What the heck has been going on in your garden?
Well, where have you been, I think, is the bigger question. Oh. No, I've been telling people where you are. Mind you, I think I told a few lies about how you were at the casino and stuff like that, but whatever. You were down in Niagara.
I was, yeah. And then last weekend, Brantford, and then this weekend, Kitchener. Yeah, so I've been traveling around. Yeah, some of the entertainment contract work that I do between shows and other things like that. So, yeah. So your family
never sees you.
Not of late. May, the spring in May is very, very busy for me. Yeah, it has been traditionally so. But I'm happy to be back, and we're still putzing around in our garden, of course, and just as you are. But what is going on in your garden? Like, where are we at? And somebody was asking me about tomatoes the other day. Where are we at in tomato land? That's one of my questions.
Oh, well, we could definitely be out planting. I mean, it's been a great spring in terms of moisture levels, so that's wonderful. We've got nice, moist soil. I don't remember the last frost. I probably should have written it down. I think it was last February. It's a very long time ago. So, it's time. I mean, tomatoes are sort of my last plants I go outside with because they are heat-loving plants. Tomatoes and peppers. If you put them in the ground too early into cold soil, cold by the standards of a tomato or a pepper, you actually set them back to the point where you could even end up with peppers that the plant grows, but it never actually flowers because it got so shocked by that cold soil. So all summer you have a beautiful green pepper plant with no flowers and no fruit. So, you know, err on the side of caution when it comes to tomatoes and peppers. Even wait another week if you can.
Okay.
But absolutely, you can be getting out all kinds. If you haven't got your carrots and beans and all those seeds in the ground, get to it. Lettuces, beets, chard, kale, all of that definitely out this weekend. So I know I've got lots on my plate.
Okay, you know what I'm going to get out? I'm going to get out the numbers because we would love for people to call. If you live in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Or if you live outside Toronto, anywhere else in the province of Ontario, here's a toll-free number, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Ashley know if you're a first-time caller, because I will give you the garden wings, which I just realized I don't have in my hand, but I will get them. And we want you to call often. We want you to call early, and one question per call, please. Okay, so we're very excited. I'm very excited to be back and catch up and find out all what's happening in Gardenland. Have you got any announcements?
I do. Maybe we should do the break, and then I'll do these announcements quickly.
We'll do the break. Okay, we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on this 18th of May. My goodness, it is just tripping along, isn't it, the month of May?
And it's very, very busy in the gardening world. So just quickly, Brampton Horticultural Society is hosting their annual plant sale today. Doors open at 9 a.m., but of course, don't go until 10 because you're listening to the show. And the doors will continue to be open until 1 o'clock at the Brampton Curling Club, 46 McMurtry Avenue. And it looks like they've got some sort of fun things going on, silent auctions, garage sale table. Also going on in the plant sale world next Saturday, the Agincourt Garden Club has a sale from 10 until 2 at the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue at Shepherd. This is a rain or shine event, cash only, lots of unusual plants. And next Saturday as well, the Markham Garden Club has a plant sale from 9 a.m. until sellout. Again, rain or shine, lots of perennials grown by the members, and both Markham and Brampton are able to take cash, debit, or credit card. So the Markham event is Markham Village Community Center, northeast corner, parking lot 6041 Highway 7 East in Markham. And one more this Tuesday, after the long weekend, this Tuesday, May 21st, at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, the Toronto and Cactus and Succulent Society is having a meeting, wide open. Everybody is welcome. And, you know, cacti and succulent are very trendy. The speaker is Jasper Pearson. The subject is the Buffalo and Erie County Conservatory and its cacti and succulent collection. Plus, there's a workshop on repotting cacti. So head on down to that on Tuesday evening at 7:30 p.m. Toronto Botanical Gardens.
Wonderful. Sounds exciting. Okay. And I love succulents. We'll talk about that another time. We're going to go to our first caller, though. We have Barb on the line from Ayton. Please, or welcome to the show there, Barb.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Good morning. I was just wondering, is it necessary to change the soil every year, like for in your annual planters?
No, I don't. The only reason I would change any dramatic amount of soil in my planters would be because local cats had been using it as a litter box all winter. But if it has just sat there, you know, untouched, obviously the soil level will have dropped. So you're going to have to add to bring it back up to level. But remember as well, it's a potting mix that you're going to buy, fresh potting mix. And you, what I do is I just, yeah, do a big stir of last year's soil mix, pull out the roots that are still in there, you know, clean it up a bit, add fresh soil. I use a slow release fertilizer when I plant up containers so I don't have to fertilize all summer, and then plant them up again.
Oh, okay. But when should you take it completely out? How long could you leave it?
I if it smells bad. I mean, either like the container mixes are basically a peat based vermiculite perlite based mix. There's no real soil in there. If it looks really broken down, like it's dust, or if it smells swampy because it's collected water, you know what, I would just use that kind of judgment. Otherwise, I would just keep using it.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you so much. Okay. You have a good weekend.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, okay. Barb. Barb got me thinking, you know, because we sometimes think that soil, yeah, it loses its whatever. But you were saying a lot of time it's very innate, right? So it's we can take that soil and just keep adding a little bit of organic matter or something, and it revives it?
Right. Well, container mixes, like I said, well, the peat moss is the only thing organic typically, or core, yeah. C-O-I-R, is in there. The container mixes are designed. They're literally R&D material. So they're designed to not only retain moisture, but also drain well. So that's why we never use garden soil in a container, because it's too heavy. It doesn't drain fast enough. It's fine in the garden, but not in a container. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing. I know people would sometimes every year buy new stuff, but it's expensive. So why? Yeah. Why bother?
Well, and if there's not a need to either, you know, I think I would be like Barb. I would at one point think, oh, I should change this every year because all the goodness is gone out of it. But I guess that's not the case.
No, you have to add the goodness, if you will, the nutrient. There is no nutritional value to potting mixes. They will do what's called a nutrient charge. So you'll read a little tiny number, 0.1, 0.05. Those are just little nutrient charges. You must fertilize when you are working with potting mixes. And that's synthetic fertilizer. This gets a bit complicated. But if you're getting into really big containers, sure, you could add compost as an example. But, you know, your usual 10, 16, 20-inch container, no. You don't. You just use regular potting mix.
Okie dokie. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to give out the numbers again. 416-360-0740 is the Toronto number. 1-866-744-740 is the 1-800 the toll free number. We'll be right back with much more on the Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got the Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, we're going to go right to our next caller. We have Sandra on the line from Etobicoke. Welcome to The Garden Show, Sandra.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean.
Morning.
Thank you so much for a wonderful show every week. Really enjoy it and all those useful tips. My climbing rose has started with black spot already, which seems very early.
Yeah, it is a bit. But that's black spot is a fungal disease. And remember, when it comes to fungal diseases, it's all about the weather. So black spot this early in the season would indicate that the conditions are perfect for that fungus to start growing. That means gray days, high humidity, lots of moisture, and all that important stuff. So what can you do now? Well, number one, did you do any cutting back on that climbing rose?
Yes, I did. And it's very bushy. I mean, it's looking incredibly healthy and it's grown quite a lot. So I do cut it back quite a lot.
Yeah. So all that rain. So when it comes to fungal diseases, the best thing we can do is prevent them. We can't actually cure a fungus, but we can prevent a fungus. Well, in the sense that we can't eradicate the fungus. So what's available now? There are fungicides available to you. They are sulfur-based usually. Off the top of my head, one comes to mind. I don't even know if it's still on the market. It's called Serenade, and it's strictly a liquid spray, sulfur-based spray designed to, like I said, it's not going to eradicate the fungus, but it'll stop it from spreading. So what you would do is get a hold of, unless you at home you have dormant spray, and of course dormant spray, the kit comes with lime sulfur, which again is used as a fungicide. So you could use that, mixed with water, sprayed. Just see what you've got in your arsenal there in your garage. And if not, go and buy a fungicide. Follow the instructions. And at the end of the day, good garden hygiene will help with this. Clean up the leaves as they drop. Even take off any of the spotted leaves and get them off the property. Do not keep them even in your composter.
Yeah, I've tried to get rid of them. But I thought it was perhaps a bit late for dormant spray.
Right. So dormant spray is two things. It's oil and it's lime sulfur mixed together with water. It's called dormant spray because we use it on dormant plants. And actually, that's something that back when the plant was dormant, you could have sprayed your rose in an effort, again, to prevent problems. The oil and the lime sulfur are both a fungicide and an insecticide. So in the summer, we don't typically use the oil, particularly at the strength we use it when the plant is dormant. But there's very good instructions on the package. You can use lime sulfur through the growing season.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I know there are some ready-made up sprays that say they, help with the black spot, but I've just never seen it this early.
No, it's very early. We're having an early spring, but that's a record-breaking, if you ask me.
Well, that's why I couldn't believe it when I saw it, because it's on a trellis that goes into the vegetable garden, and there are no other roses near it. It's just on its own.
The spores hang around all winter in debris, in other, like leaves, etc. So it's there. It's always the spores. Once you've got, it's everywhere in Southern Ontario, black spot spores. All you need are the conditions for those spores to germinate. So a spore is like a seed, except it's much smaller. So to germinate, to grow, and the conditions have been perfect, obviously.
Yes, well, it's been very damp, very humid.
And is today at my house, that's for sure.
Same here. Thank you so much.
Good luck,
Charlie,
with that. But yeah, that's all you can really do. Good garden hygiene is one of your best things to do to prevent fungal diseases on any of your garden plants. So keep it clean. Get some fresh mulch.
I'll get out there. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much for the call, Sandra. Always nice to hear from you. Okay, let's go to our next call. We have Elizabeth calling from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Elizabeth. Hey there, Elizabeth. You there?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. There's static on my line. I'll just ask my question, and then I'll turn on the radio. The question is that I'm going to cut back my phlox, my mums. What other plants can I cut back? Can I do it now? And how far do I cut them back?
Okay, great question. Hang up your phone and turn up your radio. Okay, well, that's happening. I assume Elizabeth was working with tall flocks as opposed to creeping flocks, because there are, you know, what's called garden flocks, the taller flocks. And actually, I have been working away on cutting back perennials for probably about a month now. So when to do it? Do it when, you know, as soon as you can. How high will you cut these plants down? Well, at this point, there's probably green coming up on both of them. There's probably green coming up because, remember, both good examples, garden phlox and garden mums, are herbaceous perennials. So the roots stayed alive all winter, but all the above ground from last year's growth turned brown and crispy. So what happens in the spring, of course, is assuming the plant is alive, which it most often is, that new little shoots will start to grow from below ground, from those living roots, and pop up above ground. Meanwhile, that's all intermixed with last year's brown, crispy stems, etc. So now, to get down on your hands and knees with a nice sharp pair of pruners is to remove all the brown, but try and not cut out the green. So that's, you know, that's your only challenge. The earlier we do it in the season, there is no green. So you can just go through with it almost like a chainsaw. Mm-hmm. But at this time of year, she'll have to probably pick around a bit and cut out all the brown. It cleans it up. Again, it lowers your chance of fungal diseases. Phlox is famous for getting powdery mildew. So the more you can open up these plants, get air circulation, sun penetration, get out all the brown and dead and crispy, the better and healthier the plants will be.
Okie dokie. Okay, our numbers to call, 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. And if you live anywhere else in the province of Ontario outside Toronto, here's a 1-800 number. It's toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Okay, we have Dale on the line from Markham. Welcome to the Garden Show, Dale.
Good morning to you both. On Mother's Day, which certainly wasn't very long ago, I was given a really lovely looking plant called a bougainvillea. It's about a foot and a half tall, and it was covered in red blooms. And I put it in the tag. It says that in May I can put it outside, sunny protected spot on a terrace, water daily during the summer, blah, blah. So I didn't put it outside. I put it in our solarium. It gets about 4 hours of sun in the afternoon. And on Wednesday when I looked at it, about a third of the blooms were on the floor. So I took it out of the window and put it on a table away from the window, and in carrying it 3 feet, another third of the blooms dropped off on the floor. So now I got, like, I don't know, five blooms left. So what's happening here?
Well, it's a pretty tough tropical plant. Bougainvillea are the ones that, if you've ever been on the Mediterranean or some parts of the world where they use it, like we use Boston ivy. So this is something that you'll see just covering buildings. And when it's blooming, it's just, you know, awesome. So what's going on there? I would ask you about the watering. What kind of watering you've been doing on that plant? Have you been watering it like every day or what?
Well, it said to keep it wet. So I watered it, it was wet when I got it, and I probably watered it 2 days later, thinking I'm supposed to be keeping it wet. And I'm using water that's just been sitting in a, you know, a watering container, but I let it sit overnight.
Right. Okay, so does it actually say wet or does it say moist?
No, it says wet.
That's weird. Okay, so I never think of bougainvillea as a plant, like a plant that lives in swamps, right? A plant that wants to be wet all the time is a water plant, like a, you know, a lily you know, some of those kinds of plants that are just really, really, you know, moisture-based. I think what's happened, how big is the pot that it's in?
I'm just looking here, like it's more than 8 inches.
Oh, yeah, no, so it's a good size pot.
8 inches.
What I would do is two things. One is stop watering it so much. Feel the soil. What you want is, you don't even need to stick your finger down into the soil. Just feel the surface of the soil. If it feels moist to your fingers, do not water. at some point, it's going to feel dry on the surface to your fingers. And at that point, there should still be some sponginess. If you press on that sort of crispy, dry surface, if you press, it'll bounce back, which tells you there's still moisture in that soil. If you wait in another few days, at some point, it'll stop being bouncy. So then you're bone dry. So you don't want to go to the bone dry point, but I would go to the dry on the surface point. So depending on the temperature and keep it in the sun, the plant wants lots of sun. So get it back into your solarium. If you can put it outside, you certainly could. We have no frost in our forecast, and out into, now you wouldn't go right out into a big windy, sunny location. You would take it out slowly, you know, put it in a sheltered spot for a few days and then move it out into a sunnier spot until it's in a sunniest spot you've got, and feel the soil. Water with that room temperature water you referred to, but do it based on what the soil feels like. So it might be every 5 or 6 days. It just depends on what temperatures are going on.
Okay. Okay. It also says on the tag for the winter, oh, it says feeding. Okay, but winter, place in a cool, light location where the temperature is between 4 and 8 degrees Celsius. Water minimally. Uh-huh. Like, where can I find a cool, light location that's between 4 and 6, 8 degrees Celsius?
I know. Well, that's challenging for many of us. We just don't have those. Yeah, a root cellar, which is typically a dark place, is the right temperature, but it's too dark. So sometimes people have like an unused bedroom that they could close off and have no heat going in there, or they'll have like a basement room with a window. So, or even sometimes a garage can work if it's an insulated garage or an unheated shed, that sort of thing. You want that brightness, but you want cool temperatures because the plant goes semi-dormant for the winter. It doesn't want to be below zero because it will die.
Okay, so if I don't have any of those, I just get it as cool as I can get it, I guess, eh?
Yeah, exactly. The coolest spot you can. And, of course, you'll cut way back on your watering in the winter.
Okay, thanks very much, Dale. We just have to run to our next caller. Good luck on that. We are going to go now to Carol, who's calling from Wasaga Beach. Welcome to the Garden Show, Carol.
Hi.
Hey, how are you? What do you got for Charlie there?
I have a question. The other day I was listening to her, and she was talking about how the seeds of the trillium spread. And I missed
it. It was. I think it was about ants, wasn't it?
No. Go ahead.
How is it that they spread the seeds of trillium?
How is it that they spread? I would assume, but you know what? Now you're making me wonder. Because I'm not. What we were talking about the other day was how slow it is to encourage trilliums on your property. They are just so slow to get established. So yeah, you just mentioned ants, Dean. Hold on, I'm just trying to read this because this is true. I would assume they were wind through to ants. Oh, okay, so there you go. Yeah, Dean's right. All right.
Well, I heard you say it the other day on one of your garden little chit chats. So I heard you saying that, and so I remembered. The things you say stick with me.
I know, but I didn't even hear myself say it. I can't remember saying it. But no, you're right. It says here quickly, trilliums are primarily dispersed by ants. The ants are attracted to the protein-rich elaiosome on the seeds of trilliums, which they eat after carrying the entire seed back to their nests. So, it's a slow process, waiting for the ants to do their work.
Perfect. Thank you. I was interested, and I was trying to tell my daughter about it, and I totally forgot how they transport it.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you
We rely on the ants, and it is a slow process. But, you know, we wonder sometimes why we keep the ants around, or people get frustrated with ants. We wouldn't be in this world today if we didn't have ants. They disperse seeds. They eat all kinds of debris, dead stuff. They are scavengers of dead stuff. So I read somewhere we'd be under about a kilometer depth of dead stuff if we didn't have ants cleaning up the earth for us.
That's crazy.
I don't know. But that's because they're constantly cleaning up and eating stuff that would nobody else, it would just sit there.
Wow, that's overwhelming. Yeah. That's all. You're right. We don't think of it that way, because I'll tell you, we've had them in our house, and they're, you know, and it's been a struggle to get rid of them. We have got rid of them, but you know, but it was like, holy cow, for a month we've seen them coming out, and we don't see them in a positive way when they're inside like that. We see them in a negative light.
Exactly.
But then when you point out something like that, I begin to look at them in a whole different way.
Right. Well, that's the point, is they do have a purpose. And I hear you, that nobody wants, ants tracking through their house. But that does kind of, I mean, it's frustrating, but you could, if you take the time and watch ants that are in your house, you can see exactly where they're coming in and you can see exactly where they're going, because they follow the same trail back and forth. So then you just go, okay, now I know what I'm working with here. And you get out that little ant killer. It's a borax and sugar liquid. And you put little dots of that along the trail.
I made some. I made some honey and borax. And you're right, within about 48 hours, they were gone.
Yeah, because they love it. They take it back to the nest, and then the borax kills them.
Yeah, it didn't take long. But now I'm feeling bad. I should have taken them all and put them outside.
Well, you wouldn't have been very successful.
No, I don't think so. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Steve on the line calling from Orillia, and I have it on good authority. Steve, are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I am going to give you your garden wings. Okay, welcome to the garden show.
Good morning. Question on rhubarb. Sorry?
I just said good morning. Go ahead.
Good. Okay. On rhubarb, if you transplant it, is it true you should use it for about 3 years?
That's correct.
That was an easy question, wasn't it?
And an easy answer, too.
Yes.
Yes. You know why? When we transplant rhubarb, transplant anything, it's shocking. They go into a certain amount of transplant shock. So I would say it's partially dependent on the size of the rhubarb you're trying to transplant. If it's a big, healthy plant and you transplant it and it remains a big, healthy plant, then I'd probably still cut a few stems off it this year, but not too much. But yes, if it's a little straggly, brand new baby plant, or it's been in the wrong place and it's suffering and it's small and it's, you know, just not thriving, then I would totally let it get established before I did any harvesting.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much for calling. Do not be a stranger.
Yeah. Are you an asparagus? I was thinking of asparagus because
rhubarb
it's also
fan.
The season. But are you a rhubarb fan?
Not really. I always have fond memories when I was a kid, you know, the old, you get a bowl of sugar and then you get rhubarb and you just, because in this, you know, in those days, every day was a week long. It felt like when you were a kid and you just walk around with your little bowl of sugar and your rhubarb and you just stick it in. And I think I probably sucked the sugar off more than anything, but eventually you ate the rhubarb as part of this whole process. But for baking purposes, I mean, I've had some great rhubarb, you know, baked products, but the guy I live with is not a rhubarb fan, so I haven't made it a big priority.
Elliot doesn't like it, eh? No.
He likes baked goods, but not rhubarb.
Yeah, I love rhubarb pie, but I'm very excited now that the asparagus season has started. So that's something that is I always look forward to May. Are you an asparagus lover?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I just don't. Yeah, I haven't planted any here. I probably should, but I haven't. It does like a very well-drained sandy soil and consistent moisture. And for me, it's all about water, though not this year so far. But there's only so many things I can grow, because throughout the hot summer, I can't do the watering I might wish to do.
Gotcha. Okay. We are going to take a break. Here are the numbers to call. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We do have some room on the lines. Give us a call. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show. And before we go on to our next caller, Charlie, let's just mention next weekend that we will both be in studio because it is Doors Open.
Doors Open Toronto.
Yeah.
Lots of places to go and visit, but definitely plan, put the Zoomerplex on your list of places to go to. I think it's, oh, I bet you I even brought it up here somewhere. The yeah. It's like it's 10 to 4,
10 to 5.
I think. Oh, it's 10, 10 to 5.
Yeah, 10 Saturday to 5 on both those
Sunday.
Days. Yeah, and then there's going to be, they've got free Chapman's ice cream, and you can get your a souvenir photo taken, and there's going to be all sorts of the radio hosts here right. throughout those 2 days.
Yeah, and the TVs, the studios are open. You can see where all the TV yep. is made. You can visit the offices of Zoomer Magazine. Like, it's all, it's a very fun event. And, of course, the famous Moses Neimer TV Museum, Television Museum. Moses has been collecting televisions forever. You know, since they were invented, he started collecting them. Like, he's
I believe statistically he has the largest collection on the planet.
I believe that's true. He's hundreds. And the story of television, how it was invented by a farm kid, you know, in the Midwest, riding the tractor day after day, coming up with this idea for how to make moving pictures in a box in your home as opposed to the theater, because there was moving pictures obviously at the theater. Anyway,
yeah,
very cool story. So come, you and I will be there.
Yeah, we'll be there Saturday.
We'll be there Saturday, exactly. And I am bringing the second part of your birthday present with me next Saturday.
Well, I'm very excited.
You have to bring the first part of your birthday present next Saturday, and we'll put it together with the second part, and you can show it on air, because we are on what's the word I'm looking for? We are webcast.
We are.
Yeah. Anybody right. is well, watching us online.
I'm very excited. Yes. It'll be nice, A, to be in studio with you between 9 and 10, and then as soon as that is finished, we will launch into Doors Open and ice cream. And and I know that I'll be helping with some of the tours between then and probably 12:30. So around.
Oh, that's good of you.
Yeah.
And we have a guest, surprise, mystery guest. Oh, it won't be a mystery. We have a guest joining us next week as well. So anybody who has heard of the Tattooed Gardener, though, that is his Instagram and his Facebook handle. His real name is Paul Gelatli. He'll be joining us in studio next week as well. So that should be very fun.
Sweet. Okay, let's get to our callers. We have Gloria on the line from Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Gloria.
Hello.
Hello.
Morning.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead there, Gloria. Yeah, Charlie's waiting for your question.
Oh, you're breaking up a lot.
Okay, well, you're not, so you go ahead. How's that?
Oh, no, you're still breaking up.
So, Gloria, you go ahead with your question. We can hear you.
Okay, I'll go ahead with my question. I have an American beechnut tree on my front garden, east exposure. I want to get rid of all the grass. I'm sick of it. I want to put in perennials and annuals. Is that possible? I know there's a lot of roots there.
Okay. Am I breaking up for you, Gloria?
No, it's like underwater and it's really bad. I can't understand what you're saying. Should I call back next week?
Gloria, hang up the phone, turn up your radio.
I've got it down, dear. I've called you before. I know all the procedure.
Okay.
My radio.
All right, so say goodbye, hang up the phone, and you'll hear me better on the radio. Pen and paper in hand. Beautiful, sounds beautiful. A big American beech tree, eastern exposure, front of the house. Typically, beech trees have branches right down at ground level. If it hasn't been pruned, which may or may not be the case, and if it's a big old plant, they can be, you know, 40 feet tall and 20 feet wide. So that's a lot of tree. But that eastern exposure and the roots that Gloria referred to could be a limiting factor. So what you're going to do, is add some soil. You're going to add about an inch of triple mix or compost, bring the soil level up a bit, and then you're going to look for perennials, even annuals, you're going to look for perennials that are able to handle semi-shade. There's lots and lots out there. Maybe what I'll do, there's lots and lots out there. I don't even know where to start. Hostas are always great. I love the Japanese forest grass, though it likes a fair amount of moisture. For some height, Rogersia is amazing. There's phloxes that'll grow in part sun. Monarda or bee balm can be great as long as it's not going to get mildewy in you know, part sun, part shade. Ferns. So there's lots and lots of choices of perennials. And of course, for your annuals, stick to things like coleus, begonias, and impatiens for your shady locations. But you're going to choose small plants with small root balls, you know, small roots, small pots, small little bits of root in order to be able to plant in amongst the roots of the tree. So you'll think you want to plant somewhere, you'll get out your trowel, you'll start digging and realize you're hitting roots. So now the trick is to find a spot where you can pop a little root ball in between the roots. So it's going to be a hunt to find your best planting locations when you're planting around an old established tree. Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Great. Okay, we're going to go to our last break, and when we come back, we'll have more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio, and we're going to go right to our next caller there, Charlie. We have Morag on the line from Etobicoke. Welcome to The Garden Show, Morag.
Thank you. Charlie, I'd like to know how to bring my two compost piles to completion. I started with leaves from my neighbors last fall. We can't use our own. We got a 75-year-old oak tree, and I guess they don't break down. One of them has had vegetable scraps all winter. The other one has only had vegetable water. They're coming along, but how do they get to where we want this beautiful brown soil?
So if leaves have been your really big first brown addition, and then the green addition has been some vegetables, what you're going to ultimately end up with is more of a leaf mulch than a compost, unless you can get some other, you know, other things in there, eggshells, coffee grounds. I add soil, just, you know, scrape some topsoil from somewhere in your garden, add that, and that will speed up that breaking down. It's the little microorganisms that do all the work, and they need to be fed. So you have to not only introduce them to the compost, but then you have to feed them. So moisture, stirring, and adding a nice mix of food scraps, not animal-based, of course, and just whatever you've got kicking around. Keep adding leaves. What happens, of course, is the bottom of the pile will be beautifully composted, but where you're adding on the top will not be beautifully composted. So perfect world, you fill up a composter, one composter, stop using it, go to the other composter, use it for 6 months or whatever, and when you go back to composter number one, it's all completely composted. You do have to stir it every now and then, and you may have to even add water. But if you want to be able to just empty the composter, ready to go, you got to stop adding.
The one with the food scraps, okay. That's been about two or three pot loads a week, so they're still sort of there. So you mean close it off now?
Yeah.
The eggshells and coffee and everything.
When you decide to close it off, it will slowly decompose. You can speed it up by adding, as I said, topsoil, some more, whatever weeds you're pulling out of your garden right now. Like, just fill the whole thing up with whatever you've got. All my things, my pruning from my last year's perennials, any cleaning up I'm doing in the garden, all goes in the compost. And then once the box is full, leave it alone. I also added worms to mine, and I definitely add soil to mine. And on a rainy day, I'll leave it open so the rain gets in, and we stir. That will speed it up dramatically, the stirring. All right?
Okay, thanks for the call there, Morag.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, we're going to go right to John in Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, John.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean. Charlie, morning, John. I have a patch of like garden is maybe 3 by 6 or so, and it's so shady. It's under the apple tree, and I don't know. I want to add something to the soil because really all I have there is mint and maybe parsley, but nothing else. How can I improve that, please?
Okay. Well, things like parsley, you replant every spring, I assume, whereas mint is a perennial, so you're working around the mint. But in the spring, when the mint is just a little tiny clump of green leaves, is your easy time to add. Well, if you've got compost, John, you know, homemade compost, add that. If you want to buy some triple mix, you could do that instead. But and remember, we never increase the level of our garden dramatically. The most you're going to add at any one time is about an inch worth of fresh organic material, composted manure, anything like that.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, Charlie, because I have, I don't have compost, you know, because of animals. Anyhow, but I have peat moss and I have cow and sheep manure and I have, I got some soil. So can I mix that and top it up?
Yeah, because what you got there are the makings for triple mix. Garden soil, peat moss, and manure. That's what triple mix is, one third of each.
What plants can I put there?
What did you say? What plants?
Yeah. What can I put there? You know.
Well, as you said, you've got things like parsley. You could do lettuce if it's because lettuce does quite well in fairly low light situations, as long as they're not too close together. There's enough air circulation. You know, slugs can be an issue. Otherwise, yeah, I'd be looking at. It depends whether you want to go ornamental or edible. There's not a lot of shade-tolerant edible plants. We tend more towards the ornamentals, you know, the trilliums we were talking about earlier, the ferns, the hostas, astilbe, you know, there's something called barrenwort. I planted a raspberry splash. Oh, pulmonaria. Yeah, there's a bunch of cool ornamentals that do well in shade locations that you can work with, too, if you want to get that space filled in. But the mint is, bottom line, your takeover plant, right?
Yeah. Okay, I'll try. Okay, Charlie, thank you very much, and have a great weekend. You and Dean, both.
Thank you. Okay. You too. Yeah. Happy planting.
Thanks John. Okay, let's try. We'll see if Ann has a quick question. Ann is calling from south of Buffalo. Welcome to the Garden Show, Ann.
Oh, a quick. Hi, a quick question. This is about wisteria, which I could talk about for an hour. I've had the plant for 30 years. Okay, and it was attached to a big arbor. Well, the arbor was old as the plant. It was rusty. It fell down with the wind. So in April, we had to cut the wisteria. You couldn't take the wisteria off this big arbor because it was wrapped. It was all knotted. You know how it wraps around all the metal and stuff. So we had to cut the wisteria. So what's left are. The main stems, which are two main stems, are woody stems, and they go up about 5 feet, okay? So there's no new shoots coming off those old woody stems yet, okay? I hope eventually they will. But on the bottom of this wisteria, and this has been going on for years, it sends out shoots that are very close to the ground, where the root the stem hits the ground. It sends out
suckers.
Right.
Just giving you a heads up, and we got about 30 seconds left to get to the question.
They will grow as far as 20 feet, okay? And they'll wrap around the ground, you know, and they're real sneaky. So are these suckers, I've been cutting them off, you know, over the years. Or are they part of the main plant?
They are, yes, they are part of your wisteria, but because you've got that big old trunk, you're hoping that you'll get growth higher on the trunk than right down at the bottom. So keep an eye. If it looks like it's nothing happening at the top and you're only getting that green from the very bottom, then let some of that green grow from the bottom and get out your chainsaw and cut that big 5 foot tall trunk down so it's only a foot tall and start the whole thing again from that big massive root and trunk and start a whole new fresh vine. That's my suggestion. Thanks, Ann. And thanks, everybody. Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Ashy. Couldn't do any of this without everybody's help and great, great questions. And what a great weekend we got going on.
And again, remember, next week, doors open Toronto. Again, just remind. Yeah.
And we are in studio.
Yes.
And just as a quick aside, this past week I was in at the Zoomerplex and I taped a the Zoomer television show, and it's called Guide to Seasonal Living. And outside, we planted a bunch of stuff, and you'll see it next week at when we're there for Doors Open. So this Friday, May 24th, 11 p.m. on Vision TV, you can watch me and a few others doing all kinds of sort of fun stuff for seasonal living. Thanks, everybody. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.